I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to have a kind of early birthday party. October will mark the 100th anniversary of the Central Library in Indianapolis. We'll talk about that milestone and explore many other activities at the library, including the opening of the new Center for Black Literature and Culture. My guests are Mike Williams, Central Library Manager and a 35-year Indy Library employee, Nichelle Hayes, Special Collections Librarian, who's overseeing the establishment of the Center for Black Literature and Culture, and Pat Payne, a member of the Indianapolis Public Library Board of Trustees. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881, email nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, track us down on Twitter at wfyi. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about some big doings at the library. October marks a major milestone for the Central Library. It is the 100th anniversary of the Central Library. We're going to talk about the significance of that. In addition, there are many other doings, including an exciting new Center for Black Literature and Culture. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are Mike Williams. He is the Central Library Manager and has been a 35-year veteran of Indianapolis library experience. Nichelle Hayes, who is Special Collections Librarian and is overseeing the establishment of the Center for Black Literature and Culture. And Pat Payne, who is a member of the Indianapolis Public Library Board of Trustees, in addition to many, many, many other hats she has worn in our community. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
It's good to have you here. So let's start. We're going to dive into the birthday stuff, but in a bit, and I think that will consume a lot of it because 100 years is a significant slice of this city's history. Mm-hmm. But given that we have some news here with the opening of the Center for Black Literature and Culture, I think I'm going to start by asking Nichelle, what all is going to be involved in the center? What will people find there?
That's a great question, John. We appreciate that. People can expect to have something for everyone. We're actually trying to hit the targets of 5 to 95. So we're going to have...
So a very narrow window.
Very narrow window. Yeah. We're going to have books for children, okay. Books for teens and tweens, and also adults, and also more seasoned citizens. We're going to have interactive displays. We're going to have a huge focus on local heroes and sheroes like Mari Evans and Etheridge Knight. We're going to have robust programming. So we're going to have a lot of things for a lot of different people. So we're really excited about opening on October the 21st.
What was the genesis for this? I mean, the inspiration.
Our CEO, Jackie Needis, had thought about this for several years, and I think it was also on the mind of several other library board members, and that idea was kind of bandied about through community leaders to get their take on it, and after that idea coalesced, we presented a grant proposal to Lilly Endowment, and we were lucky enough to be funded by them. And so from then, we just kind of took off. So we got our marching orders in about November of 2016, and here we are right now.
Pat, were you one of those library board members that you made reference to?
It probably will not surprise you to know.
No, not at all.
Absolutely. I think this had really been in the executive director's mind even before then, but all of the work that I have done in the community, just very, very passionate about filling in all of the gaps when it comes to the history and the culture of those who have been suppressed, eliminated. And I think that this center will certainly complement everything that's already going on in the city, and to know that it is being done in Central Library just really makes our heart full of glee to understand that. And the fact that it's opening at the same time we're celebrating 100 years is even more something to celebrate, because we're talking about 1917, 100 years ago, and here it is 2017 when the center is opening. So there's something very spiritual about that.
Why is it, you say it's very important that it's opening in the Central Library, that that adds significance. Why is the location of having it housed there in the Central Library? I think I know the answer, but there are people who are listening who might be relatively new to this city and the community.
Well, to me, and I'm sure Nichelle certainly has a response for this, but to me, you come to the library to get truth. Mm-hmm. You come to the library to get resources about the truth. And so the fact that it is opening right here in the city of Indianapolis in Central Library, to me, sends a very, very important message.
And John,
Michelle,
I would answer
please.
That by saying that for me, and I might be biased because I'm a Central staff member, but I really feel like Central Library is a nexus, a hub of our entire system, and it's a jewel for the entire community. And the way we sit downtown and so many people can access us, people that live downtown, people that work downtown, we're a place for everyone. And for us to have the Center for Black Literature and Culture to be housed there, it's just going to be so accessible for a lot of different people.
And I'm going to try to say this without demeaning. There are obviously other branches of the Indianapolis Public Library.
Definitely.
Here.
Amazing branches.
Yeah.
Doing great work.
And the part I don't... libraries are special places for anyone who cares about ideas, to use Pat's term, truth or even... understanding. I mean, they are the ways that we communicate back and forth through generations, where we store all human knowledge. So a library is a special place. I think part of what the reason I was asking the question is, Central Library, though, is like a cathedral. I mean, a library is a library, and that's cool enough as it is. But the Central Library is just this stunning building.
Yes.
Mike?
It is. I mean, it's a historic landmark designated in the 70s as a historic landmark. It was designed in a neoclassical Greco-Roman motif so that in many ways it is a temple to truth, to books, to learning. And it is a place that is free and open to everyone. Anybody can walk through those doors, read, listen, learn, find understanding. And I think that is one of the key things that is so important to have the center there. It's so important that that building has existed for its 100 years, because it is a welcoming, open space. A slogan above the door in that grand entrance after you've climbed those many stairs from St. Clair Street literally says, "Friendly books welcome you." That slogan has been a part of the library's history for many, many years, and we were happy to be able to restore it as part of this celebration. And it's true. The worst day that you can still find a book in whatever format that book is, whether it's printed paper, whether it's an e-book, whether it's an audiobook you listen to, you can still find solace in that book.
We are talking about the 100th anniversary of the Central Library in Indianapolis and the opening of the new Center for Black Literature and Culture at the library, which will come on October 21st. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. So, Mike, take me back 100 years now, because, in some ways, it was an interesting time to have the library open. We were just in 1917, the country was just about ready to plunge into World War I.
Absolutely.
And, you know, there was a fair amount of unrest in the land and all of that. So, so talk me through how it got, you know, the idea
how came
about.
Came to be.
Yeah, how it came to be, basically.
Well, the library itself in Indianapolis was founded in 1873. It grew out of a church sermon that was a call for a public library in the then-growing community of Indianapolis. Thankfully, it's a still-growing community in our state. The library went through four different homes in the period between 1873 and 1917 when we moved into Central Library at 40 East St. Clair. We outgrew each one of those homes successively. It had to find a newer, better, bigger space. This was the first building that was exclusively designed for the purpose of being a library. The previous building had been at Ohio and Meridian. The library director at the time was a wonderful woman named Eliza Browning. Eliza was a visionary for her time. She accomplished two incredible things for our city. She established branch libraries. Instead of just having one spot downtown, two of those branches that she built with funds donated by Andrew Carnegie that she went after long and hard to get Andrew to write that check still exist in our system today. The newly renovated East Washington Library at Washington and Rural and the Spades Park Branch Library in Spades Park. So two Carnegies that have also stood the test of time. So those three buildings are sort of our centenarians, all three more than 100 years of service. Central Library was planned as the sort of a capstone to an urban renewal project circa 1916. Remember, we just celebrated the state's bicentennial last year in 2016. Well, there was a big movement in the capital city to beautify Indianapolis, grow, show that it's a big, vibrant, moving city, not just this little wagon trail in the Midwest. And the city founders and organizers, city fathers, really, in that era, developed an urban renewal project that we know today as the mall downtown. Previously, there were houses, some green space, a school. Lots of things existed on that mall that now is just a beautiful green space capped at the north end by Central Library and at the south end by the War Memorial. That all was just beginning. It was an idea. The rest of those buildings didn't exist. Central Library began construction after a lengthy competition for the architecture of it that Paul Cray won. Paul Cray was a Frenchman. He actually spent World War I in a trench in France. Okay. So he won this architectural competition, but he didn't really get to be on site to see his dream building be built.
Did he ever get to come back to see
it? He did. Fortunately, okay. He survived the war, had a lengthy career as both an architect and a teacher in the Philadelphia School of Architecture. Fascinating fellow, Cray. But he had a vision. He wanted to make this temple of the book, so to speak, neoclassical design, Indiana limestone. It truly is an amazing facility and really capped the north end of our downtown for many, many years when north of 10th Street wasn't a whole lot other than till you got further up Meridian on Mansion Row.
So it's been now there. Could we talk a little bit, and I'd like all three of us, and this is going to be, we've got a break coming up here in a couple of minutes, so we may have to carry this over onto the other side of it as well. But I'd like to talk about a subject that fascinates me. When Jackie's been on the program, we talk about this a lot, which is, you know, the evolutions that libraries have had to go through to survive. I mean, the expectations for a library 100 years ago are somewhat different than they were, than they are today.
Absolutely.
I'll start with you on that, Mike, but I want to hear everyone's thoughts.
Libraries, Eliza Browning also coined a phrase, a live thing in the whole town. She envisioned the library as a system that grew and changed much like a plant or any other living organism, a live thing. That means things change. Change is constant when there is life, you know, whether it's a potted plant on your desk or a library system with growing and changing collections, mirroring popular tastes and classical needs, it continues to evolve. Evolution is the key to a successful public library, in my opinion.
We're talking. I'll tell you what. I want to hear Pat and Nichelle's thoughts, but we'll pick them up on the other side of the break. We're talking about the 100th anniversary of the Central Library in Indianapolis and the opening of the new Center for Black Literature and Culture. My guests are Mike Williams. He is Central Library Manager. Nichelle Hayes, who is a special collections librarian, who's overseeing the establishment of the Center for Black Literature and Culture, and Pat Payne, who in this capacity is a member of the Indianapolis Library Board of Trustees, but could be here in many other capacities as well. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about the 100th anniversary of the Central Library in Indianapolis and the opening of the new Center for Black Literature and Culture there. My guests are Mike Williams, he's Central Library Manager, Nichelle Hayes, Special Collection Librarian, who is overseeing the establishment of the Center for Black Literature and Culture, and Pat Payne, who's a member of the Indianapolis Public Library Board of Trustees. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. So before we went to the break, I asked for people's thoughts on the changing, the changing roles of libraries through the century that the Central Library has been there. I guess Nichelle, I'll go with you next.
So that's a great question about the change, and I think something that people don't realize is that libraries are constantly evolving. We're constantly meeting the needs of the community. Circumstances change, needs change, and so we meet those changes. I think traditionally people have thought about libraries as strictly as books, and for a very long time, books were the main method of communicating information. But now we have so many different means of doing that, and libraries are stepping up to the plate, and they're helping patrons and citizens using those mediums, if it's Facebook or other social media or e-readers, and we're also still doing traditional books. So we're constantly evolving. And when you're in library school, you learn that because you'll read some kind of snippet and you'll say, oh, my goodness, I don't know what's going to happen. Everything is changing. What are we going to do? And then you look at the timeline on it and it's 1902. Mm-hmm. And so I think people are always saying that, but we're always meeting those challenges of changing and meeting the needs of the community.
Yeah, the good old days are always receding from our sight. Aren't
they? Yeah. You know what? When I was preparing for this, I decided to look up some history. Okay. My first experience with the library was on 30th and Meridian. And it was called Raw Memorial Library. I can still see all those steps. My mother would take my brother and I can still see all those steps leading up to the library. And I think the Children's Museum was right next to it. And so when I was looking this up, it was telling me that it was the first library in the neighborhood. It was one mm-hmm. of those, it was located in a drugstore at first on 30th and Illinois. And then in 1908, it moved to the basement of School 60, which is still one of our IPS schools. And then it moved two additional times before it found its home there at 30th and Meridian. And I thought that was, it was such an important part of our lives as we were growing up and learning and loving our city. And the other thing I wanted to say, this was something that one of our fellow board members wrote, Dr. Terry Jett. And she was saying that, let me read this, and so the complexity of celebrating the 100th anniversary of the 1917 library opening in Indianapolis with the knowledge of what African Americans faced in this city and country at that time coinciding with the grand opening of the Center for Black Literature and Culture at the very same location is not lost on us.
Yeah, she anticipated my next line of questioning here, because when we talk about the library and the changing roles, we're often talking about the technological innovations and all of that sort of stuff. But in some ways, I think the symbolism of the opening the Center for Black Literature and Culture, that is not something that would have existed in a library in Indianapolis in 1917.
Absolutely.
And I'd like for us to talk just a little bit about, you know, how libraries also work as forces for cultural acceptance, social change. That seems to be particularly pertinent at this moment in this country's
history.
Pat seems to be the one who's got the most energy on this, so I'm going back to her.
Well, I always have to go back to truth. And since my passion is also with teaching and learning, that is why what is getting ready to happen is so very important, not just to us who are educators, but also to the entire community, the state, and the nation, because hopefully we will see this can be a model for other libraries. We are constantly trying to, what is the word I want to use, make up for the lack of truth when it comes to the experience of Africans and African Americans. And the library is going to be a key source in us doing that.
How serious, how important is that responsibility, Mike? That
it's one of the most important responsibilities that all of us as librarians can ever exercise. During my watch as manager at Central Library, since I returned from looking after a collection of branches on the southeast side of town, we have done a series of programs and exhibits, events, really leading up to this next logical but large step, the opening of the center. One of the first things that happened when I walked back in the door was an exhibit from an artist that was called Kin Killin' Kin. It was a large exhibit for the library to mount. The African American History Committee worked really, really hard to bring it to our city, exhibit it at Central Library, and expose literally thousands of school children to it. They would bring them in on buses, they would view the exhibit. Then members of the committee and the team that they built to handle that would help those children walk through what they experienced as they looked at that art. It taught kids about the realities of gangs. It taught kids about how to process some of the things that they saw from their school bus on the way to the library. And it made our community better. Then the sheriff graciously allowed us to be the caretaker of a sculpture that he commissioned called the Peace Dove. Local artist and firefighter Ryan Feeney took a bunch of guns that the sheriff had to confiscate because they were used in commission of a crime, and he made a dove, a symbol of peace, out of all of those weapons of violence that is still on display in our atrium. It's been an evolution. Just as the library has continued to evolve since before we moved into Central Library in 1917, it continues to evolve in 2017, and I am quite confident it will continue to evolve long after my career at the library comes to an end and new folks take watch over that community treasure.
We are talking about the 100th anniversary of the Central Library in Indianapolis and the upcoming opening of the new Center for Black Literature and Culture. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what a listener named Dr. Woody Myers has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Dr. Myers, how are you?
I'm great, and I really admire your panel and this discussion, and I'm so happy that the Central Library is still as vibrant today as it has been for quite some time. And I just want to remember, just as Pat suggested a few minutes ago, my own library experience at 16th and Martindale, now Andrew Brown, at the Dunbar Library, I believe it was called, at School 16. That's where I started my Indianapolis library experience. I don't think it's there anymore, but it was a wonderful place where I opened myself up to a lot of truth. But the only point I wanted to make, and I would dare not ever disagree with Pat Payne and others who are educators, but mixed in with that truth, there are a few myths and lies as
That's
well.
For
and
sure.
Part of what we've got to do as educators and as leaders is to point out that mixed in that mountain of truth, there are some things that just aren't true anymore. Especially in my own field of medicine, there has been so much advancement in so many fields, and what we thought we believed to be true in the 50s and 60s, we know not to be true today. And I think in so many other fields, there's been advances as well, especially in how we view ourselves and with race and the race and gender perspective. So mixed in with that truth, there are some myths and lies that we need to point out as well.
Yes.
Thank you very much for calling in and joining the conversation, Dr. Myers.
And I think that points up even more the importance of the center, because absolutely correct, Dr. Myers. Our history has been suppressed. It's been distorted. It's been eliminated. And so once again, the importance of the Center for Black Literature and Culture.
How much of this, I mean, it's always struck me that a library, which is a relatively, you know, at least in the way we operate them today, a relatively new conception in human history. I mean, libraries have existed, but they often were for only the very wealthy and educated for several millennia, in part because books were so hard to produce up until the invention of the printing press. But it's always struck me that library is almost a perfect manifestation of the Enlightenment. This idea that, and it gets to this question of truth and lies and all of that, is that you have to create these forums in which truth and falsehood can joust in the hope, as we hope, that ultimately truth will prevail. How important is it, you know, like to use an extreme example, you know, I don't think there are too many people, definitely not in this room, and I hope not who are listening, who would find wisdom in Mein Kampf. On the other hand, it is important to have it available on a library's shelves. Could you explain why that is, Mike?
Libraries at their best represent all sides of a question. Some questions are very binary. Some questions are very multifaceted. A great library collection has something for everyone and also, frankly, something that will probably offend everyone. Keeping that collection live and vibrant, and as Dr. Myers mentioned, with especially things like medicine, up to date, that's part of being a library and not an archive. We keep treasures. We hang on to things. We have a special room called the Indianapolis Special Collections Room where we keep archival things in special conditions to keep them for the ages. But most of the materials throughout the six stories of that building, we strive for current, relevant, accurate information. We had to get rid of a whole bunch of astronomy books when the scientists decided that Pluto was no longer a planet. You know, sorry, Pluto, you're not a planet anymore. Got to get fresh books. It's sort of like stocking a shelf full of bread at the grocery store. You always have to have fresh bread. There are some things that are classic. Rye bread lasts a little longer. But other things, you have to continually freshen. We are always buying new materials. And that means other things die off and go away. And that is part of the skill that librarians bring to keeping that collection live and relevant.
John, I'd like to go back to your previous question about this Center for Black Literature and Culture not being possible in 1917. Back in 1919, the Flannery Guild Deposit Station opened up, and that was a branch that was in a predominantly African-American community. And so from the very beginning, the Indianapolis Public Library has been serving people of color and other minority groups. So we would not have had the center at that point. But however, our relevance and our importance in the system has been here since the very beginning. And the Center for Black Literature and Culture is resting on the shoulders of the African American History Committee, which Mike Williams just mentioned. It's been around since 1978, and it's been bringing incredible programming like Maya Angelou, James Baldwin, and Nikki Giovanni, and a host of other people to the community. So we're really excited about what we've done in the past and what we're going to do moving forward.
Oh, and I did not mean to demean in any way the library in that regard. It's more, you know, Indiana, and it's not in terms of not erasing part of the state's history. I mean, 1917 was not that long before the Klan got hold of Indiana state government.
And that is very true. That's
something we have to acknowledge. In fact, we've got an email question. It's right on point from a listener named William. And if you want to join the conversation by email, please send your email to nolimits@wfyi.org. William writes, John, the Central Library is a thing of beauty and also useful. I love it. 1917-18 was a dark time for German Americans. Terre Haute Public Library participated in the hatred of all things German. He attributes this to Kurt Vonnegut Jr. by publicly burning books and publications in the German language. What were IPL's policy and actions in this hate campaign? Mike, do you know, or...
One of the things we uncovered when we opened the time capsule, because as the building was being built back in 1916, as the cornerstone was laid, a time capsule was encased in it. We haven't had a chance to go through all those contents in depth, but one of the things that's in there is the library's handbook and rule book, including selection policies. Mm-hmm. So the answer lies there. I don't have access to that today to give you a definitive answer, but I'm pretty sure we didn't go about burning books.
One would think that would have been recorded somewhere in the Indianapolis archives. So in terms of this, I guess, Michelle, what are your hopes for the Center for Black Literature and Culture? What do you hope that it will accomplish?
I hope that this can become a destination spot for local people as well as people from all over the country. My big, hairy, audacious goal is that this will be the best in the nation. Mm-hmm. So when people think about Black literature and culture, they will immediately think about Indianapolis. I want this to be a place for everyone, people of African descent and people that are not of African descent. I want this to be both windows and mirrors, windows for you to learn about that culture and history, and mirrors for you to see yourself reflected in a lot of different ways with a lot of really amazing people. So my hope is that people will come to the center, come to our programming, check out books, learn and grow.
So you want it to be the best in the nation. What qualities do you think will make it the best in the nation or would make it?
I think it will be a combination of having a really relevant collection of materials and coupling that with vibrant programming that will bring people in and have people to discuss and learn and talk with each other.
Oh, I think that's so important. I wrote down here, it'll be a place where conversation is stimulated so that we can all come together, not just as African Americans, not just as Africans, but as people who are part of the diverse community of Indianapolis and beyond. So we can sit down and talk and converse about issues.
We are talking about the 100th anniversary of the Central Library in Indianapolis and the establishment of the new Center for Black Literature and Culture in that library. My guests are Mike Williams, who's Central Library Manager, Michelle Hayes, who's a librarian there, who's overseeing the establishment of the Center for Black Literature and Culture, and Pat Payne, who's on the board. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a call at 866-476-3881. I'm John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're having kind of an early birthday party and, I guess, a birthing ceremony, too, here on No Limits. We're talking about the 100th anniversary of the Central Library in Indianapolis and the birth of the new Center for Black Literature and Culture in that library, which will take place on October 21st. We have got a lot of listeners who want to join in, but I realize there are some details, some logistical details we probably ought to take care of before we run out of time. Because this is a celebration of sorts, that means there is a party, right, Mike?
There is indeed. I hope everybody can come to Central Library and join us on Saturday, October 7th at 11 a.m. That's when the ceremonies will begin. There will be some speeches. The Indianapolis Children's Choir will perform the Messiah of Nations, along with the Indianapolis Quintet. That was performed at the grand opening back in 1917. And starting at noon, there will be family activities and cake. So come down, join us at Central Library. Parking will be free that day. Get in the wonderful library parking garage off Pennsylvania for free. And come down, see the building, see the sights, see what's in the time capsule. Take a peek at the new center and enjoy some cake.
And the center itself opens 2 weeks later, right?
That is correct. So our opening ceremony is October the 21st from 12 to 3. Roland S. Martin, who is a nationally known journalist, mm-hmm. will be our keynote speaker. We'll be having a ribbon cutting. Some of the people that we are honoring in the space will be there to be honored in person. And we're going to have some entertainment, some interactivity, and we're just really excited about everyone coming down.
Is there a cost to that event?
This is free and open to the public.
Okay, so from 12 to 3 on October 21st, 11 a.m. on October 7th are the big times to remember.
And all library events are free and open to the public. That's our mantra.
We've gotten a message from a listener named Cynthia via Facebook. And if you want to find us on Facebook, you can do so at No Limits WFYI. She writes, "I basically lived in the Broad Ripple Library when I was young. I went to School 80, where it sat right next door and served as the school library, too. Every day after school, I would stay at the library until I took the college bus to get home just before my parents did. I love the librarians in the children's department in the basement. They taught us so much." Is that, you know, we have not talked an awful lot about how libraries, in addition to being sort of these storing houses for knowledge, also serve and have served as community centers, as places where people gather. Mm-hmm. Michelle, you're leaning into the microphone, so I know you got something you want to say there.
That's so true. We definitely see ourselves as a third place, not work or not home, but a place where you can come and gather and share and just relax and read and just open up a lot of different worlds. I think everyone has a memory of their favorite librarian. For me, it's Ruby Anderson. She was a librarian at the Emerson branch, and I couldn't wait for summer to have the summer reading program, and that's back in the old days when we used to give a book report. And she would listen to me and just was so in tune to what I was doing. And, you know, I would give her the information. I'd get my medals. And it just opened up the love of reading for me. And so I just thank my mom for always taking my sister and I to the library. But that personal connection is so important. It's more than just books. It's a personal connection with the people there at the library.
We are talking about the 100th anniversary of the opening of the Central Library in Indianapolis and the upcoming opening of the new Center for Black Literature and Culture, but really we're just sort of singing the praises of all things library today,
yes,
on No Limits.
Yes,
if you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Tom has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Tom, welcome to the program.
Hello. Hello, everyone.
Hello. What's
Hello.
On your mind?
First off, I'd like to express that I'm very happy to hear about the center opening. I think it's great for Indianapolis and exceptionally important for Indiana. On the subject of the 100th anniversary of the library, I do have a question I'd like addressed. When the library was expanded a few years ago, I was ecstatic, envisioning something like you know, an expansion of Alexandria. Hopefully, yes. But instead, for all the new space in the library, it seems there's a lot of open space, a lot of space designated for public meetings and computer terminals. Mm-hmm. It just seems to me that the number of books have grown fewer and fewer, and what little space there seems to be there for books only seems to be maybe half occupied at best. I just would like to know what happened to the books in the library.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Tom.
Thank you all.
Mike?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, it is a continual evolution of what's on the shelves and what's available. Right now, we are in a phase where we have made some room at Central Library. We've done some rearranging. We had to clear out an entire wing to have space for this wonderful new center that's coming in October 21st. We are also in the process of pulling back what we call last copies from many of our branches. Things that are the last copy in our countywide library system, and the whole collection floats around so that if you have a need for something and you request it to be sent to your home library, which we'll say is Nora, the book goes to Nora. You return it, but you might be on business over around Park 100, so you return it to Pike. Well, it sits at the Pike branch for a while. Then it gets called back and it goes over to Southport because somebody on the far south side wants it. The things just move around. We are in the process of refilling the warehouse, as it were, that Central Library is, to make things a little more accessible at the branches, but also, once again, enrich the depth of the collection at Central Library.
We've gotten a tweet from a listener who says, looking forward to this event, will the artwork hosted in the CBLC be permanent, and is it created by local Indiana artists?
Great question. We are going to continue to support Meet the Artists, which is a local annual event that we have every year where artwork is throughout Central Library. So with the Center for Black Literature and Culture, we're going to be able to display art throughout the year. So we will be continuing to spotlight local artists.
We've gotten two questions by email from listeners named Charles and Sean that are similar in theme. Charles' question reads, I'm a local author who recently had a book placed in the library system here in Indy. Will local authors and their works and their work, like myself, someone other than the superstars like Toni Morrison, etc., be included in this new center? It says thanks. And then Sean writes, I would just like to thank all the librarians for all they do. It is truly appreciated. Central Library is just a stunning place to be. When you are in it, you feel like you are in a palace. Does the library help new authors find people to help them with their books? So they're similar in that questions about emerging authors. Charles is focused really on the Center for Black Literature and Culture. So
a big focus that we have for the Center for Black Literature and Culture is on local heroes and sheroes. So that might be up and coming heroes and sheroes, or those that we already know. So we're definitely a place for local authors to have their books in the system. So I encourage you to reach out to us at the library, and we can review your book and see if it will meet our criteria. But we already have a lot of local authors, and in Meet the Artists, we also have authors in that program as well. So we're increasing that.
Yeah, this is probably the point where I need to do either, depending on your point of view, either a disclaimer or a shameless plug, one or the other, because the Indiana Authors Awards are coming up, and they do the Meet the Authors panels, and they have the day of reading.
Yes.
And obviously I'm there to I serve as the moderator, interviewer for the Meet the Authors panel.
And that's sort of the triple play of our three consecutive Saturdays in October. Mm-hmm. October 7th is the 100th anniversary celebration. October 14th is Meet an Author, Be an Author, and the Indiana Authors Award dinner, sponsored by the Library Foundation afterwards at the end of that day. That is a wonderful time for local authors and local want-to-be authors to come learn from others. Folks from the Indiana Writers Center will be there. Lots of workshops throughout the day, as well as tables and authors throughout the Simon Reading Room, and a great time to meet an author. So that's October 14th, and then the center opening on October 21st.
Crowded October for you guys.
Indeed.
So very busy.
We're talking about the 100th anniversary of the Central Library and the opening of the new Center for Black Literature and Culture. I see we have got a complete phone bank full of calls here right now, so I'm going to ask both our listeners, the callers, to be brief in their questions and our panel to be brief in their responses, because we are getting a little tight on time, and I want to give everyone a chance to talk, if possible. Susie, you're on the air.
Yes. I just wanted to say that I'm a lifelong lover of the library. I began loving the library as a young person in Eagledale, the Eagledale branch. I grew up to be a media specialist, and I want to say thank you to the library. Last year, I brought two different groups of 100 students each time, 7th and 8th graders from Decatur Township, to see two different authors. One was Nate Powell, who wrote, that helped draw the graphic novel March that was written by John Lewis and others, and then Jason Reynolds and Brendan Kiley, who wrote All American Boys. Both of these were just great experiences for the kids, and I'm just saying I hope that funding for such programs can continue, because it was great.
Thank you.
On behalf of the Board of Trustees, I want to thank you for that comment and to also commend and celebrate the many staff persons that are working day in and day out at our many branches in the library. I also, as an IPS person for 56 years now, want to let everyone know how proud we are that Nichelle Hayes, who is going to be the director, is an IPS graduate. So thank you for all your hard work and for always making IPS look good.
Thank you.
We are talking about the library and the big doings there, the anniversary and the opening of the new Center for Black Literature and Culture. Adrienne, you're on the air.
Hi, I am very excited about the new center, and I am hoping you guys might do something really special with media about James Baldwin. I know that his books are amazing, but there's something very powerful about seeing him actually speak, and I often get lost in YouTube kind of looking at old interviews that he did, and I'm wondering if you guys might do any kind of exhibit. Like a multimedia exhibit about him.
You saw the documentary, I presume,
that
came out.
Great.
And we would love to show that
thanks
at the library, and that's something that we're looking at doing with our programming for next year. So
Baldwin will be a key fixture then in the Center for
Definitely,
Black Literature.
He already is. And I was fortunate enough to visit his archives in Schaumburg, the Schaumburg Library in New York. And it was just amazing to see those things up close and personal. So we would like to bring a little bit of that to Indianapolis and share with the public.
We've gotten a response from a listener via Facebook. And again, you can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. Listener says, in response to the question of German Americans, I was there for the opening of the time capsule. Please tell Mike Williams that included in the time capsule was a newspaper written in German.
There you go.
So it sounds like they did include that as part. Would be interesting to be able to go back, though, and figure out exactly what the motivation was for doing that.
There were so many great objects in that time capsule. I was fortunate enough to be able to look at a couple of those. And one of the newspapers that was included was the Freeman, and it was the first illustrated newspaper for African Americans. And so I was just blown away by that in a good way. And so in addition to the German papers and all the things that went into that time capsule, a lot of people took a lot of time to make sure that it was illustrative of the community. And I think that speaks to what we're trying to do right now.
What is interesting, I would suspect, about looking back at that period through this window is in some ways there was a lot more diversity of expression.
Yes.
I mean, media were not as homogenized as they are now or centralized.
Right.
And, you know, because there were tons of these little papers and publications all over the place. Almost every ethnic group had some sort of voice.
Yes, and there were several of those included in that time capsule. We are currently in the process of digitizing all of the objects that we found when we opened that capsule. So they'll be up. You'll be able to see them in person at the library in the display case in the Simon Reading Room, but they'll also be available through our Digital Indy website.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Tina. I'm hoping, Tina, that this does not have any personal application to you. And again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Tina writes, I seem to recall way back in the olden days that the library used to have a forgiveness day when all overdue fines and lost books would be waived and a person's account could be cleared. Is there any hope that this will be part of the anniversary of the library?
Tina's
Mike?
Just asking for a friend. That's all that is.
Yeah. I don't think we can afford to do that across the board. I'll defer to Pat Payne on that if it's a board action. But ultimately, talk to the folks at the CERC desk. We are there to help you, and we will find a way.
And we do have several programs that you can use to pay down fines, and especially for students during the summer time frame.
Yes. So. Yeah, it seems counterintuitive or counterproductive to have a library discourage people
from
reading.
Yeah, we don't want to punish people for reading.
Come on in, talk to us.
Michael, you are on the air.
Oh, yes, I want to compliment Mrs. Hayes, because I've already seen a lot of pictures online for the new center, and especially for mentioning the local contributions of great literatures, writers like Mari Evans and Etheridge Knight.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you very much for calling in, Michael. Yeah, that's got to be exciting, I mean, to be the one that gets to open something like this.
It is. It's very exciting, and I could not have done this without the support of my staff members at Central and around the system. So many people have offered to help in little and small ways. Volunteers have come in to help us with different things. So it's definitely been a labor of love, and definitely a lot of people have been working to get this done. So I appreciate all of the support that I've gotten in the community.
We're getting tight on time, but I want to ask, one of the fun things about opening something like this, it's a little bit like opening the time capsule. There are always, as well as you think you know a community and a place or even the history of it, there are always things with a little more looking that step up and surprise you or that you realize you did not know. In the research that came with getting ready to open this, what did you discover that you didn't know before?
I didn't realize that the African-American community here in Indianapolis is 28% to 30% of the population. I did not realize it was that vast. I'm a local native Indianapolis person, so it just everybody feels like I know them just because I live here. But I didn't realize it was that significant. And then with our research, we realized that in 1870, one-third of the population were people of color. So I think those kinds of things just always kind of open your eyes. Even if you're living here, they're just things that you don't know.
That will have to be the last word, other than to remind people that the birthday celebration is October 7th at 11 a.m. The celebration for the opening of the Center for Black Literature and Culture is October 21st from noon to 3.
That correct? Is correct. Free and open to the public.
I'd like to thank my guests, Mike Williams, Nichelle Hayes, and Pat Payne. It's been a lively hour. Thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you.
To thank our listeners. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.